Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another mini-sode of The Shelf, Dork Shelf's official podcast. Now that the fifth and final season of Orphan Black has officially begun, we're doing some ongoing coverage that began last week in a mini-sode that featured the show's Emmy-winning star Tatiana Maslany and the hilarious Christian Brune, better known as Donny Hendrix. This week, we're continuing to cater to our Clone Club followers with Orphan Black's creators Graham Manson and John Fawcett, who developed the show from a tiny embryo of an idea into the fully fleshed-out series it's become. Graham and John had a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, but let's begin with what's on their dork shelves, starting with Graham.
Vinyl records.
Vinyl records?
Yeah, it's a very, very big dork shelf.
The pride of your collection, about your favorite vinyl?
It's got to be somewhere deep in my 60s and 70s Motown funk and soul. Maybe deep down to a James Brown or a Marlena Shaw album. But I collect all kinds of everything in crazy corners of 90s hip-hop and all kinds of stuff. And lots of outlaw country and lots of 60s music, psychedelic 60s, garage rock. I'm a dork.
I have a little bit of a problem with, you know, when I go into board game shops, I can't not buy things. So I probably have I have two big full closets, probably 150, 160 board games. And so there's a lot of board games.
Yeah. Did any of those make their way into Kasima's apartment?
Kasima's, well, last year we used them extensively, and the year before we played one of my, in season two or season three, we played one of my favorite board games, which was Rune Wars. Mm. So we had, I've seen in Kasima's lab where the guys are all around a table and she joins the board game and is actually really good at the game and has played that before. Mm. Whenever there's a board game, they always come to me and ask what board game we want to play,
right.
And
awesome.
Then we just try and clear it. But I also have a lot of vintage Mickey Mouse stuff.
Any props you've taken home or anything like that?
The whole point in building a comic book board game store, mm-hmm, was so that I could steal merchandise, awesome, and take it home.
Perfect.
That was the whole point in building that set.
So keep that in mind.
Free stuff. Yeah.
John and Graham certainly have a lot to be proud of when it comes to Orphan Black, but here's what they're perhaps most proud of.
I think the thing that I'm most proud of is the fact that this was a show that really shouldn't have gotten made in the first place. Nobody wanted to make it. And the show is a bit weird. You know, it's a kind of, you know, what Graham and I had in our brains was a kind of a genre mashup. And I don't think there was a lot of conviction from anyone that that was going to work. That it was a kind of a ludicrous premise that we somehow, you know, with Tat and just the, you know, to some degree, some technical know-how, and that we kind of made that a believable place for. And managed to kind of garner enough support from the media and from fans that we could keep the thing going for five seasons. I mean, it's been a really, really wild journey. I mean, Graham and I were new coming into this, and Tat was new. I mean, we'd all worked in the industry before, but this was kind of our first show. And so that's like, you know, it's important. It's been life-changing.
I think also we're all very proud of the fact that we took this, somewhat ludicrous sci-fi conceit. Mm-hmm. We grounded it enough and we imbued it with enough character that it became inspirational for so many young people, for so many young women, and that Tatiana and so many other women who work on the show kept the feminist themes of the show and our themes of identity, nature versus nurture, diversity, inclusion. This is the fabric of the show, and we were able to say important things on this crazy clone show. I think that's probably something that we're all very proud of.
Here's John and Graham talking about how they've come to embrace the originally unintended political aspects of the show.
I mean, the show became political without us really realizing it. I mean, we did know what we were dealing with, but as the show grew, it became clearer and clearer. And then this past year, yes, we had it always in the mind. You know, we were working in the writer's room last summer, so events have been catching up, and it certainly feels more political now than it has before. It feels important, some of the things that we're saying. I mean, we're talking about diversity on a biological level. It's so obvious that it is a strength. It's a human strength. It's a human condition. Please. Passionate about that. Tatiana is very, very passionate about that. Mm. That audience really found us. We were trying to be a diverse show, and from the very get-go, sexual orientation was all part of it. It's all part of diversity. We had to stick to the veracity of our theme of diversity. As the show went on, you know, Felix was always a gay character, always someone who was going to be never defined by their sexuality. Which was our immediate mandate. It's like, okay, sexuality, we will not define a character by their sexuality. And this is where Tatiana came in, really was very strongly helped us develop these characters, find the center, find the moral statement of the show around these issues, and the support that we got from young audiences facing gender identity issues, is the outpouring was amazing.
And surprising,
and then we took it very seriously.
Here they are talking about trying to keep current with the science and always trying to stay one step ahead of real developments.
It was always amazing to us that all of the things that we were discussing in the writer's room often we're just somewhat prescient of this, you know, because we're messing with the science that's on the cutting edge, and we work with our science consultant, the real Cosima. So our early discussions in the writer's room are always very, very broad, very topical, very focused on science and the business of science and the social aspects of science and big science and corporate science. In that sense, we are always on the headlines. We're always peeling things. And when last season, we were on really into CRISPR technology, and you know, it helps to make the show feel current and meaningful. But there's this sort of, because we're this sci-fi, we're this one step in the future, we're always like, we're trying to make a little guess, but not too far, not too broad, but a little guess about what 10 feet ahead looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting when current events like are stacking up to your show.
But at the same time, I think that, you know, from a political point of view or from a science point of view, I think that we always set out to just tell a great story and have characters that you gave a shit about. And yes, the themes of the show and those sorts of elements are important, but at the end of the day, it's our characters that we really care about. And we just always are on making an exciting trip for the audience, from just a kind of like trying to keep people guessing and keep them off guard, but also as a character, we found the more we delved into our characters and hit our, like, season one was just like, let's make it crazy, like it's just like every left turn that we could possibly throw at people. And then we started realizing that the strength of the show actually lay in the characters. And yes, lots of those things influence things in the writer's room, but at the end of the day, it's just got to be a really great, fun show to watch. So
It had to be a fun show. From the very beginning, we were like, when you sit down to watch this show in our heads, we were always said, it has to be fun to watch. It has to be, you have to be on the edge of your seat and not know what's coming.
Yeah, and not to get too caught up in the headiness or the cerebralness or the, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And they're important, and they certainly temper and flavor things, but... you know, at the end of the day, you wanna love the story, and you wanna love the characters. So,
Orphan Black is often known for surprising you and pushing the envelope in somewhat weird ways. I'm thinking of the tail in season one. So I asked them if there's any place that they ever had to dial it back where they got a little too weird, that they anything they couldn't do.
We fought for that tail.
Yeah. No one liked the tail. No one liked the tail. Networks didn't like the tail. Nobody liked the tail, and we just were like, we're doing the tail. If there's other elements, I think that we kind of often have to dial ourselves back in the humor sometimes, because I think we think things are funnier than. Like the writer's room, and even some of the stuff that winds up on the page can be kind of sometimes a little too far, and so that winds up getting scaled back often. It's still kind of funny, but I think that a lot of our more ludicrous premises are humor oriented. Can I?
No, don't say it. No. We can't talk about that.
Have you got an example?
No, not one that's fit for consumption.
No.
You know, but a practical example of this is our ambition always exceeds our budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we always go big and have to reel ourselves in.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
The clone scenes that we do are very time consuming, and it is they take a lot of planning, a lot of timing, and a lot of scheduling, because if we go to shoot even a two person clone scene with using the Techno Dolly, generally that's a full day. You add a second clone in there, it's at least a day and a half.
Mm.
So we fight daily against the confines of the show, like every other television production. This one just has its unique strictures.
We're small.
Introducing the clones is always a bit of a process, so here they are talking about that and more on their collaboration with Tatiana Maslany.
The process of it starts in, obviously, between Graham and I, and then into the writer's room. Lots of discussion about the character. I mean, we've had all sorts of different, you know, through five seasons, all sorts of different clones that we've imagined that have never made it to the screen. You know, that's a good example of things that we just can't do. It's like, you know, we want to introduce a new character, and you're like, we're already juggling so many balls that, like, bringing new characters in is a time-consuming process. And, we take it seriously because it's always like it's character and it's character building, and we don't like to just introduce someone just to whack them or kill them. You know, we want to use them in a really good dramatic fashion. And so it's a process. So it starts with us, and then into the writer's room, and then into Tatiana and discussions with Tatiana about who the character is, and a lot of it is based in her feedback. As we kind of, you know, when we were building MK last year, that was a big collaboration between us and Tat, and then further to that into wardrobe and hair and props and really trying to kind of make a define a new character that we're all really interested in. In MK's case, she was Finnish, so there was a lot of Finnish dialect coaching. For Tat, you know, it's a very time-consuming process because it's not something you can just do. Although she did manage to whip out Crystal. Yeah. Pretty much like that. Yeah. Crystal, for some reason, came together really easily.
Crystal was, I think, the one clone that sort of existed before we went, well, we got to use that clone. Right?
Yeah.
Whereas usually it sort of emanates from the writer's room, and we have a story function for the clone. And a general idea of what the character is. That's when we go to Tat, and she starts like getting juiced on what kind of character and digging into the character.
Yeah.
And we do tests. We'll see versions of the character, which is always fun for us because you get to go to the makeup trailer and see one version and go back.
We shoot a lot of tests prior to going to on camera. You know, makeup, hair, wardrobe, shift change, notes. Try different things, and then before she actually gets to the, and then there's also generally a lot of rehearsal, trying to build rehearsal time in prior to taking a new girl out for a walk. You know, it's not just showing up on set and trying to do it. We're it's a lot of rehearsal and planning. Well, I mean, a good example of our collaboration with Tat is, like, you know, we spent our weekend here at the office working on story. Because we kind of had to, working on episode 9, had to back up on a bunch of things and some things that we weren't happy about, and she had some ideas that I think were illuminating, and she literally came in on the weekend, sat in the writer's room with us for 2 or 3 hours and worked through story. And that's not a general collaboration with a lead actress. That's not you're not bringing your lead actress into the story room to work with the writers on a weekend.
And then early on in the process of this too, I remember Tatiana helping us, the writers, immensely with the character of Helena. You know, we had this great character with story function, which is, yeah, the assassin that we don't know her identity is another clone. You know, kind of a reveal. But it wasn't until we really were digging into that character with Tatiana that we found this damaged character with this deep backstory that is, you know, frankly, this amazing, amazing twin sister story, this yin-yang story of Sarah and Helena that stretches right through and is very powerful this season.
I think she just started on the pages, just a kind of, Helena, I'm speaking of, started on the pages kind of just a generic bad guy, you know, and I think it was Tat that kind of like really helped, because we knew we needed to discover her identity and that she was going to have to be a character. It was certainly Tat was certainly very responsible for helping find the humanity and for us to understand the character better.
And her, you know, her commitment to diversity, it just starts with her feet on the floor. She lives it. She's here. She demands a certain level of respect on set, a respectfulness around all of these issues. She's politically active, stands up for what she believes in, and these are, you know, they've become very important issues to the entire Orphan Black universe. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful that it all spread from this idea of cloning where you think we're all the same. And we are, but it's our differences that are the most important thing mm-hmm. about us as humanity.
Plus she works from a very, just, you know, she does a lot of planning and prep work, but she also kind of, and there's, you know, certainly a political aspect to Tat, but on the floor and in her work, it's very much a from the gut, a very emotional kind of way of acting. So it's all the planning, all the prep, and then that just, you just do this, and that's, and then it's working from this other place. And that's something that I think that she's kind of taught me as well in my work as a director, because you do an astronomical amount of planning and shot listing and prep and everything's there. And then I've found working with her that you kind of have to like then check that stuff at the door. You just got to go, present yourself and be very present in the way the scenes go down, and kind of work from an emotional place as well as a director to kind of, and that's kind of the way our collaboration has worked the strongest, I think, you know. So that's certainly the kind of person, certainly the kind of actor she is, and the kind of work we do together.
Without getting into spoilers, John and Graham talk a little bit about what to expect from this final season.
We have a strong Sarah and Helena storyline running through this year.
I think one of the other things that we're kind of excited about this year is that there is, because it's kind of, everyone sort of has their favorite clones, and, you know, everyone's got, like, you know, of these women, that these characters that we've created. I think Graham and I felt really like we wanted to explore those characters a little deeper than we had in previous seasons and allow more screen time and not so much origin, but to, like, really for us to get to know them better. And so there's been a decent effort to kind of create stories that allowed us to get much, much deeper into each individual character and to kind of create episodes where they were a little bit, you know, they're a little more more a Cosima focused episode or a more Allison focused episode, you know, those kinds of things, which allow the characters to kind of even become broader, and that's been kind of really exciting, you know, with telling a little bit more about them and about their backstory, I think is really, you know, like, who are Cosima's parents, and those kinds of things are things that we started to get really excited about, because they were just deepening the characters and making them more real, I guess.
It's a nice thing to do in your final season, to have that character space to ask, you know, who were they when we met these characters, and who are they now, and look at that journey within the context of an episode in a final season helps to complete this journey and helps to flesh it out. We get some interesting answers to things, that questions we may never have even thought of, and some questions that might be very obvious.
We'd like to thank Bell Media and Space TV for arranging this set visit, and Space TV's Teddy Wilson for moderating the discussion. If you want to catch up on the first four seasons of Orphan Black, you can rent or buy them from our sponsor, Bay Street Video, but if you don't live in Toronto, you can always stream them on Crave TV. Now, they're not a sponsor, they're just something that I recently subscribed to and highly recommend. With the exception of every Bond film and some HBO movies, there's not much on there for movies, but it's great for TV and shows that you can't find on Netflix, particularly classic sitcoms like Seinfeld and Cheers. There's loads of Comedy Central stuff, original shows like Letterkenny and What Would Sal Do, and of course, most of HBO's back catalog. Again, they're not a sponsor. Crave TV is just something that I'm now sold on after trying a free trial. It's well worth the $9 a month. I still support the physical media and places like Bay Street Video, but with so much great content out there these days, there's room for everyone. Speaking of content, have you checked out Dorkshelf's other podcasts yet? We've got Play Dead, a show that deals with death in video games, Loose Cannons, where Justin DeClue and Matthew Kumar go through every movie made by Canon Films, the hilarious Low Budget Nightmares, and much more, so there's always something to listen to at Dorkshelf. Sometimes there's not always an episode of The Shelf. We have an off week, but if we do, chances are you'll find some other great podcasts on our site. So check that out. And again, thanks for listening, guys.